The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various websites, beginning with last week's article from NPR.org that was interrupted when I ran out of time. So continuing on with NPR.org, the article by Corey Turner on the Department of Justice's memo regarding Olmstead. Why now? The Justice Department memo appears to be the latest salvo in a broader effort that began July 24, 2025, when President Trump issued an executive order intended to make it easier for state and local governments to police homelessness. Endemic vagrancy, disorderly behavior, sudden confrontations, and violent attacks have made our cities unsafe, the order argues, going on to claim that the overwhelming majority of these individuals are addicted to drugs, have a mental health condition, or both. The administration's solution? Involuntary institutionalization. Shifting homeless individuals into long-term institutional settings for humane treatment through appropriate use of civil commitment will restore public order, the order reads. In a 2023 campaign video, President Trump himself pledged, "For those who are severely mentally ill and deeply disturbed, we will bring them back to mental institutions where they belong." A conservative Texas think tank, the Cicero Institute, has been a driving force behind recent efforts to forcefully combat homelessness, including through institutionalization. One serious obstacle to large-scale institutionalization of the unhoused is federal disability law that has long required home or community-based services instead when appropriate. A footnote in the Justice Department's new memo appears to suggest these laws have contributed to the rise in chronic homelessness. To the contrary, Barkoff says, the Olmstead decision has been one of the most effective tools in providing services and stable housing to people who are homeless. NPR has previously reported that the Trump administration's push for institutionalization faces another big obstacle, an acute shortage of beds at these specialized facilities. The memo arrives as Republicans have also passed deep cuts to Medicaid, which is the primary source of funding for community-based services many disabled Americans rely on. Multiple legal experts tell NPR that in response to last year's One Big Beautiful Bill Act, states must now make deep cuts to a whole range of services previously funded by Medicaid. The Trump administration's memo, they add, essentially gives states permission to cut those localized supports and instead rely on institutionalization, even though research shows the latter is considerably more expensive for states to provide. This comes as disability advocates were already pushing back against the Trump administration's announcement on Tuesday that it would move federal administration of special education programs out of the Department of Education and into the Department of Health and Human Services, a change that, as with the new Justice Department memo, raised fears of a rollback of the enforcement of longstanding civil rights protections. From NFB.org, from the back seat to the driver's seat, a Federation journey with Waymo. From the editor, as a clarification of some information in the below article, to use Waymo in Austin, Texas, readers will need to use the Uber app and not the dedicated Waymo app. Any confusion on that point is the fault of your humble editor, for which he apologizes, and not the article author. We have all heard the jokes. What are you, blind? Even a blind person can see that. Blind people driving? Absolutely not. Even in casual conversation, blindness and driving are treated as the ultimate contradiction, the joke that writes itself. Growing up, I laughed along because I desperately wanted to fit in. Like many blind people, I internalized the idea that not driving meant not being fully independent. Drivers got licenses. We got IDs. Even compliments carried low expectations. Wow, you get around so well. Or, I honestly don't know what I'd do if I couldn't drive. I spent years trying to speed past those stereotypes. I played sports, sat inches from televisions to play the video games, some involving race cars, and commented on clothes and appearances as though I could see them perfectly. But when my friends started getting driver's licenses, I hit the one barrier I could not fake my way around. pumping the brakes on the road of expectations. Throughout my childhood and young adulthood, the inability to drive seemed to shadow every major life decision. An orientation and mobility instructor once told me a blind person could never teach cane travel. How would I pick up my students and drive them around, let alone monitor them? Watching friends and eventually my younger brothers get licenses only reinforced the feeling that adulthood itself depended on driving. Even at Arizona State University, forks up, I quietly limited my own ambitions. I convinced myself print journalism was my only option because I could not drive to story locations or operate a camera. During job interviews, employers would ask how I planned to get around without a car, and I began wondering whether society's low expectations were right after all. This self-doubt led to severe depression. The Federation drives the change. It was not until I met the National Federation of the Blind in 2014 that I realized the low expectations society had placed on me did not have to be my own. Maybe there was a way I did not have to let my blindness define me. But it still seemed almost too good to be true. One of the first things that helped me embrace the Federation philosophy was learning about the Blind Driver Challenge. This initiative emphasized that lack of eyesight was not the reason that blind people could not drive. The problem was that technology had never been developed to give blind people the information through our other senses to operate a motor vehicle safely and independently. In 2004, then Federation President Dr. Mark Maurer, M-A-U-R-E-R, challenged university engineering teams to design a vehicle a blind person could independently operate. 7 years later, on January 29, 2011, Mark Riccobono, who would succeed Dr. Maurer as president in 2014, independently drove at the Daytona International Speedway, navigating obstacles randomly thrown into his path and even passing another vehicle along the course. That demonstration changed how the world viewed blind people and transportation technology. It also helped to ensure that blind people were included in conversations about autonomous vehicles from the very beginning. Uber and Lyft. A new lane, but not our road. Life has a funny way of presenting something only when you are ready for it. So it is fitting that in the same year I was introduced to the Federation and the story of the Blind Driver Challenge, transportation for blind people changed in a meaningful way. 2014 was the year blind people discovered the power of rideshare services. Uber and Lyft shook up the transportation arena like an earthquake. No more did we have to wait for a taxi that may or may not show up. No more were we forced to, as here in Arizona, ride a bus in 100-degree heat to go 2 miles up the street simply because we were not willing to pay the $15 for a cab. Now blind people had the power to request a ride from their phone and go directly to their destination. At the time, blind people were thrilled. I distinctly remember a friend of mine taking an Uber to a random place just because he was so glad he could. For years, Uber and Lyft have been great resources for our community and have participated in many Federation events, including national and state conventions. Someone looking in from the outside might assume that since Uber and Lyft arrived, life for blind people is all good now. Of course, we in the Federation know differently. Even though transportation got easier, defending our right to ride the way we want and need to definitely got harder. Rideshare services introduced new barriers. How do we find our vehicles? Is the app accessible? Would a driver really be okay transporting a family with kids? But number one on this list always is the service animal concern. Have a guide dog and want to take a rideshare? You may or may not have a driver deny you. Of course, the Federation does not sit idle in the face of discrimination. We held town halls, built tracking and reporting mechanisms, and rallied at Uber and Lyft headquarters. As my Federation philosophy developed, it became clearer and clearer that good enough is not good enough. A ride into the future. It was just 2 years after I became a Federationist that I was the first introduced to Waymo. Living in Arizona has its perks. Sunny for most of the year, no daylight saving time, beautiful scenery, and tons of tech innovation. In 2016, Waymo, operated by Alphabet, the parent company of Google, was seeking feedback from blind people to test this emerging technology. Somehow I was invited to participate. I vividly remember sitting in the back seat of that car as it drove and being completely shocked. Wow! At that time, state law still required a licensed driver to be present in the front seat. So in the back of my mind, a question lingered. Was this truly an autonomous ride, or was I being fooled? Being the skeptic I was, I asked the driver to prove the car was really driving itself. It was only when we were making a turn and the driver grabbed my hand with both of his, showing me his hands were completely off the wheel, that the reality hit me. The car not only made a perfect turn on its own, it merged into the center lane more smoothly than anything I had ever experienced. Something became very clear that day. It was not just that this technology was amazing. What became even clearer was that if it were not for the Federation and the work we put in to making sure this technology was inclusive, I would not be in that car at all. And yet doubt crept in. There is no way this becomes mainstream, I thought. In those early days, it was widely held that someone capable of manual control needed to be present at all times. Waymo launched its early rider program in the Phoenix area in 2017, began offering paid rides in late 2019, and on October 8, 2020, officially opened its fully driverless service to the public. For some, even then, it was hard to trust their lives to a robot. Mapping the route, how we got here. Between 2022 and 2024, Waymo rapidly expanded, opening to the public in San Francisco and Los Angeles, and significantly widening its Phoenix coverage. In 2025, Waymo extended service to freeways in Phoenix, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. Soon after, Waymo partnered with Uber to offer autonomous rides in Austin and Atlanta. As of May 2026, Waymo operates paid commercial service in Phoenix, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Austin, Atlanta, and Miami, with announced expansion into cities including Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, Orlando, Nashville, Detroit, Las Vegas, Washington, D.C., and San Diego, expected throughout 2026. London and Tokyo are in active testing phases. The scale is staggering. Waymo now completes more than 500,000 paid rides every week. Waymo is not the only player in the industry, but it is the farthest along in providing commercial rides and has worked closely with the National Federation of the Blind, hence this article's focus on its service. To understand where we are, it helps to know the industry's framework. The levels of autonomy, the scorecard for how much a vehicle can operate without human input, range from 0 to 5. Level 0 is full human control, what most of us grew up with. Levels 1 and 2 include common driver assistance features, helpful, but the driver is still fully responsible. Level 3 lets the car handle basic traffic conditions, but still requires a human backup. Waymo operates at level 4. No human needed at the wheel, though currently within defined service areas. Current Waymo vehicles still have a steering wheel, mostly to satisfy existing federal regulations rather than any technical necessity. Level 5 is the ultimate destination, a vehicle that can operate in any weather, on any road, at any time, with no human required. We are not there yet, but the progress at Level 4 is already changing our lives, and when Level 5 does arrive, you can be sure that the Federation will have its foot on the gas. No more riding shotgun, the policy fight for our driver's seat. The legal landscape for Level 4 and 5 vehicles is at a major inflection point as lawmakers are finally starting to recognize the potential of this game-changing technology. The Autonomous Vehicle Accessibility Act, House Resolution 4419, a bipartisan bill reintroduced by Congressman Greg Stanton, Democrat Arizona, and Brian Mast, Republican Florida, in the 119th Congress, is a high priority for the Federation. President Rick Obono has been vocal in his support, from testifying before Congress to engaging our members in call-to-action campaigns. The bill is simple but revolutionary. It prevents states from requiring a passenger to hold a driver's license to use a Level 4 or 5 autonomous vehicle. For us, this is not a small technical detail. It is a civil rights protection. Our national leadership, along with the team at Waymo, honored Congressman Stanton at SAAVI Services for the Blind in Phoenix, that's S-A-A-V-I, for his leadership on this legislation. As the legislative director for the NFB of Arizona, I can tell you this bill represents a vital step toward making sure the driverless future does not leave our community in the back seat. We will literally be able to sit in the driver's seat. I highly encourage everyone reading this to contact your member of Congress and urge their support. Before we know it, Level 5 will be here, and we do not want to be in the slow lane. The data passes the road test. Some reading this will ask, why trust your life to a robot? One need look no further than the hard data. As of the published date of this article, across more than 170 million fully autonomous miles driven in complex urban environments, the numbers show that Waymo is significantly outperforming human drivers. Compared to human-driven vehicles in the same operating areas, Waymo has recorded a 92% reduction in serious or fatal injury crashes, an 82% drop in injury-causing crashes overall, a 92% decrease in pedestrian injury crashes, and a 96% reduction in dangerous intersection collisions. For a community that has long faced the risks of distracted drivers, impaired drivers, and quiet vehicles that seem to come out of nowhere, these statistics prove that the driverless future is not just about independence. It is fundamentally about a safer way to travel. Buckle up, a briefing before the first ride. Before your initial Waymo trip, you must set up a profile in the Waymo app. If you are in Austin, where our 2026 NFB National Convention is being held, the regular Uber app gives you access to Waymo vehicles. Most features carry over, though some accessibility options may be limited in the Uber version. Important, to be matched with a nearby Waymo vehicle, you must enable autonomous vehicle rides in the Uber app. For this article, we will be riding with the full Waymo app. The Waymo app works similarly to other rideshare apps. You sign up, add payment, and request rides just like you would with Uber or Lyft. You must confirm that your destination is within the service area. Temperature controls, trip tracking, and even legroom adjustments are available right in the app. As you will soon discover, playing music and adjusting your pickup drop-off are definitely areas that need improvement. I will not go through every detail of the app layout since updates happen frequently and things change. The vehicles themselves make it pretty obvious you are hopping into a robot taxi. Waymo's standard fleet is a modified Jaguar I-Pace, a sleek all-electric SUV equipped with sensors and cameras that make it look like something out of the movie Back to the Future. Inside, it looks like a standard vehicle. Driver's seat with a steering wheel, front passenger seat, and three seats in the back. The trunk is spacious, large enough for me to fit a folding wagon and a backpack, and can be opened and closed directly from the app. When you approach, Bluetooth can automatically unlock the doors, or you can tap the unlock button. The handles pop out of the doors. Waymo is also rolling out its next-generation vehicle, the Waymo Ohai, an electric van built in partnership with Chinese automaker Zeekr. I was recently invited by Waymo to ride in these. With a lower step in height, higher ceiling, basic braille labeling of door buttons, and sliding doors, the Ohai is purpose-built for ride-hailing and is beginning to appear alongside the I-Pace fleet as Waymo expands into new markets. One of the most common questions I get is about accessibility features. To Waymo's credit, and with meaningful input from the Federation, there are a solid number of helpful features to take advantage of. When your ride is confirmed, you can use the Find My Pickup feature. Holding your phone in front of your body, the app announces the direction of the vehicle and how many feet away it is. As you walk toward the car, your screen reader continuously updates your position. Once the car arrives, you can use the same feature to locate it. You can also have the car play a melody or honk its horn if you are in a noisy or crowded environment. Personally, I find the horn feature a little more reliable, although the melody is certainly cool. Live agent support is available through the app at any time, before, during, or just after your trip. There are two settings you absolutely want to enable before you ride. Audio announcements, which call out street names at each turn and provide real-time updates like waiting for the intersection to clear, and the feature that limits how far you need to walk to your pickup or drop-off. This second feature has been helpful, but occasionally incorrect. I have had to walk close to a quarter mile in busy areas at times. This is where I want to make something very clear. Competent, non-visual travel skills are not optional. They are what complete the trip. Because the Waymo is not controlled by a person, it parks where its system determines is appropriate. I have been dropped in alleys, near dumpsters, and across a busy street from destinations. Because I have confidence in my non-visual travel skills, I have always found my way. Your cane, your confidence, and your travel training matter every single ride. Mile zero. A Monday morning commute with Wanda. All of that history, the Daytona Speedway, the legislative battles, the safety data, leads to a single Monday morning in Phoenix. Let me show you what it actually feels like. Good morning, fellow Federation family member. I'm glad you could join me as I take my Waymo to work at Savvy Services for the Blind Phoenix Center. It is one of those Mondays where you can barely remember what happened to the weekend. We are heading southwest from northeast Phoenix to central Phoenix, just outside of downtown, about 14 miles total. It is 7 a.m. My daughter Liberty just got picked up for school by her bus. Let's order the Waymo. I tap the work destination already saved in my phone, confirm my pickup address, and pay with Apple Pay. The app shows the car is 5 minutes away. We head outside and stand in the driveway. Holding my phone outward, I tap Find My Pickup. It says the spot is 40 feet ahead. For some reason, today's pickup is not directly in front of my house, but across the street at a neighbor's. We cross and wait at the spot where my phone buzzes with a steady vibration, letting me know I have arrived at the right place. It is a beautiful Arizona morning, one of those mornings that makes you smile even when you have a million things on your mind. A notification chirp tells me the Waymo is arriving. The app shows the car is 100 feet away. We listen and hear the soft hum of an electric motor approaching from the east. Not loud, something like a medium-sized industrial fan running at a gentle setting. The car pulls up directly in front of us. It is almost like it knew exactly where we were standing, you think. Because I have Bluetooth enabled, we hear the click of the door handles popping out. Go ahead and sit in the front, I tell you, since you are the guest on this trip. I take the seat behind the driver's side so you'll have the full front passenger experience. You find the handle and pull. Immediately, the car speaks. Good morning, Jordan. My wife Ashley calls the Waymo voice Wanda. The vibe hits you right away. Front passenger seat, no driver, just a steering wheel. You cannot help but reach over toward it, the seat where the belt is buckled with no one in it. You feel the leather seats, the sleek interior, the cup holders, the tactile details outlining the buttons. You find the side controls and adjust your seat independently. You find your seat belt and click it in. Just then I get in and close the door, back door. Once both doors are closed, we hear the gentle hold-like music through the speakers, the futuristic version of what you might hear waiting on a phone call. To begin your ride, press the start button, Wanda says. I ask if you are ready. You take a few deep breaths. Are you sure about this? I remind you I do this all the time. Just relax and enjoy the trip. My screen reader announces start ride button. I tap it. Double tap to start ride. The moment I double tap, the hold music stops, a small chime plays, and the doors lock, all in one seamless motion. It all happened that fast. You take one breath. We move. A smooth, clean takeoff. The engine grows quieter, and that familiar low hum of an electric car takes over. The car goes straight for about 10 seconds, shifts slightly left, makes a quick right turn, then stops. We are at the entrance to my neighborhood. Waiting for intersection to clear, Wanda says. The high school across the street starts at 7:30, and morning traffic is thick. I ask if you're okay. You do not answer. You're sitting in stunned silence. After about a minute, the car eases forward and makes a firm left turn. Proceeding on North 40th Street, Wanda says. We drive for another minute, slow sightly, and about 30 seconds later, the car turns right. And I'm not going to read the rest of that. It's kind of boring. I put on some instrumental music to lighten the mood. Quietly, I'm hoping we will not be late. I hate being late, but a small smile crosses my face. Here I am, a blind man on a Phoenix freeway on Monday morning, trying to beat traffic and get to work on time. As American as apple pie and strip malls. And then, as if on cue, the traffic hits. Squeak! Beep! The sounds close in around us. The car plays its own game of red light, green light. We feel the constant stopping and going. 5 minutes pass. Then suddenly a jerk right, a stop, another jerk, and we're moving freely again. Wow, I think we just navigated around the traffic to find the open lane. You settle back, shoulders dropping, but just as you get comfortable again, Wanda speaks. Exiting freeway within 1 mile. Your energy shifts. I can feel it. Long story short, he got to work with no problems. Speed bumps. What Waymo still needs to fix. As I park the metaphorical vehicle that is this article, I want to be honest. Even as we celebrate how far this technology has come, we must not settle for anything that does not fully meet our needs. The inability to independently adjust your pickup or drop-off location on the map as a blind user is frustrating. The in-car touchscreen is not accessible without sighted assistance, and the process for playing music requiring Google Assistant workarounds that sometimes work instead of seamless screen reader integration is frankly maddening. These are not minor inconveniences. They are design gaps that a community as engaged and as vocal as ours should not have to accept as permanent features. To Waymo's credit, they are listening. The Federation's relationship with Waymo is not just ceremonial. Waymo has been a Grand Canyon-level sponsor of NFB in Arizona conventions, a Washington seminar sponsor for 2 consecutive years, and a sponsor of our congressional reception at Washington Seminar in 2024. That relationship means we have a real place in the driver's seat, not just a ride in the back seat. We intend to use that seat. More intuitive voice control, fully accessible in-car interfaces, AI-powered conversational features, these are not wishes. They are expectations. And with the Federation's dedication and Waymo's willingness to engage, we will keep pushing until they are reality. Full speed ahead. We are not going back. Now we have choices. We do not have to worry about being turned away because of our service animals. We do not have to make small talk with a driver who keeps asking about our blindness. We do not have to apologize for our busy kids. I am reminded of something we have said many times in the Federation. We know who we are, and we will never go back. If you had asked me as a child whether a blind person could drive, I would have laughed at you. That pot of gold called the Federation philosophy has led me to a place I can never leave, a place of acceptance, a place where I no longer have to wonder whether life as a blind person can be a full life. It drives my work as Director of Strategic Initiatives at Savvy Services for the Blind. It is the force behind my doing something my O&M teacher said could never be done, teaching cane travel as a blind person. That boy who felt like he was always missing out is now a man who cannot wait to drive his friends and family around Phoenix whenever they visit. This philosophy is what my wife Ashley, lead coordinator for NFB STEM to You, and I impart to our blind daughter Liberty, our son Lemuel, and the third child we're expecting this year. Through the NFB, they will grow up knowing that blindness is not an excuse to stop reaching for your dreams. The low expectations of blindness will not be held by them. We are already planning cross-country road trips in our Level 5. I ran out of time for this week's Vision News. I hope you enjoyed listening. Please listen next time. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138.